Hey there, and welcome to the Wellbeing Lab podcast series for Zero, where you can discover the latest research in the fields of neuroscience and positive psychology to help great people and teams to thrive as they do the best work of their lives each day. I'm Beck Melville.
And I'm Michelle McQuaid. And guys, my wellbeing confession this week is that I've been working really hard to grow my business lately, but I just haven't been seeing this effort translate into bottom line results yet. So the last few days I found myself slowly leaking energy all over the place as I got stuck in stories about not being able to sell, why people wouldn't return my calls, and that the whole endeavor was too hard and maybe I should just give up, even though what I long to be doing each day is teaching people how to improve their well-being in workplaces. So instead of doing the things that might actually help my business to continue growing, I've been cleaning my office instead. Oh, fear, my old friend, welcome back.
So, Shell, this week's podcast is probably just the reminder you need to continue cultivating your levels of grit so you can keep accomplishing what matters most to you. Heartfelt thanks to everyone for joining us for episode 7, our last episode of the Wellbeing Lab podcast for Zero, as we explore the recipes that can help you to thrive at work so you can realize your potential, build psychological safety, and embrace a customer mindset and help others to do the same. Today in the lab, we're exploring our fifth PERMA ingredient and focusing on the A, which stands for accomplishment. After all, if you're being consumed by stories of fear, uncertainty, or self-doubt, it's hard to find the grit to accomplish the things that matter most to you. So, Shell, when it comes to believing that we can really embrace and deliver on a customer mindset, how can we cultivate more grit?
Well, Beck, what finally helped me to short-circuit my cleaning distractions this week was remembering that studies have found that people who have grit, what Professor Angela Duckworth from the University of Pennsylvania describes as the passion and perseverance to achieve what matters most to them, these people rarely succumb to thoughts of giving up. Instead, they see the inevitable obstacles, setbacks, and plateaus in their progress as signals to intensify their effort and practice and persist rather than as signals to quit and give up. As the Japanese proverb suggests, grit is what enables you to fall down 7 times and to stand up 8. And as a result, studies have found that our levels of grit are associated with our levels of achievement, resilience, and well-being, and that it's what enables us to continue finding success, both professionally and personally, in small ways and in big ways, around the things that matter most to us so that we can thrive. So, Beck, let's check in on how you and our listeners are doing on this front by doing a quick gut check on a few questions that Angela suggests can help us determine how gritty we're currently feeling. So when it comes to the way you work, do you tend to A, power through and finish what you begin, or B, become easily distracted? So Beck, for you and our listeners, quick gut check on this one. Do you tend to A, power through, or B, become easily distracted? Secondly, when you make a mistake at work, do you tend to A, redouble your efforts, or B, give up and find something else to try? So when you make a mistake at work, do you tend to A, redouble your efforts, or B, give up? And lastly, when it comes to your work, do you tend to A, persist in developing your interest and ideas over multiple years, or B, develop new interests every year? So when it comes to your work, do you tend to A, persist in developing your interests and ideas over multiple years, or B, develop new interests every year? So, Beck, if you and our listeners have mostly answered A to these questions, then right now you're leaning more towards the gritty end of the scale, and our challenge in today's podcast becomes making sure that you're cultivating your grit in intelligent ways so that you avoid falling into moments of stupid grit when you should have given up. And if you've mostly answered B to those questions, then you're currently leaning more towards the less gritty end of the scale right now, and our challenge today becomes giving you some simple, practical ways to stick with the things that matter most to you. So, Beck, how are you doing when it comes to your levels of grit at the moment?
So, Shell, at the moment, all things considered, I have to say I'm feeling pretty gritty as I've been involved in some exciting projects which have ticked lots of boxes in terms of what matters most to me. the Wellbeing Lab podcast series for one, and our Strength Leaders Toolbox, which has just been released as another example. So with these in mind, I feel like I can safely answer A on most accounts. But as you know, Shell, just like all the pillars, this can ebb and flow depending on what's going on in our world, as your wellbeing confession so beautifully demonstrated.
Well, Beck, the good news is that Professor Carol Dweck of Stanford University has found that when it comes to accomplishing the things that matter most to us, more important than our abilities is the belief that we can improve our abilities. Now, I want to be clear, she is not suggesting that talent doesn't matter. It absolutely does. But your talent, your intelligence, your natural abilities are simply the promise of what is possible and not the guarantee. It's actually your willingness to exert effort, to practice and to learn and to grow from both your successes and your failures that studies have found ultimately turns your talent into what you're truly capable of achieving. Now, unfortunately though, Beck, most of us tend to have a naturalness bias that means we carry a hidden preference for those people we think arrived at their place in life because they're naturally talented, rather than for those who worked hard for it. And we see this in our love of overnight success stories all the time. The problem with that is that when it comes to being gritty enough to accomplish what we most want, this naturalness bias robs us of the opportunity to be able to pivot from this is all I can do towards who knows what I can do. Because when we expect instant perfection, it actually denies that making mistakes, bumping up against our limitations, needing to build our levels of mastery over time, and failing sometimes are all part of how we move towards our true potential. And this creates a lot of fear every time we have to stretch outside our comfort zone, that we might suddenly be discovered as not being as good as we thought we were or other people thought we were. And then where does that leave us? So Beck, how do we get past this naturalness bias? Well, Angela and Carol both suggest that understanding how our mindsets, those deep underlying beliefs we all hold that shape the way that we feel and act, can be a really effective way when it comes to improving our levels of grit. For example, Carol's research have found that some of us have a deep underlying belief that we come into this world with a certain amount of talent, intelligence, and ability, and that's really our lot in life. So we're born clever or dumb, we're good at sports or we're clumsy, we're musical or we're tone deaf, and while we might be able to get a little bit better, it really just is the way things are. And Carol calls these beliefs a fixed mindset, and she's found that when we're in this mindset, we tend to judge ourselves and other people primarily by the results we can see being achieved, because how are we going to know if somebody's clever or dumb unless we look at the outcomes that they're getting? And perhaps you can spot some of the naturalness bias in this set of beliefs. Now, by chance you're listening to this description and thinking, surely no one really thinks this way, let me explain how this mindset shapes your feelings and your actions at work, because I have to be honest, Beck, I was a little bit shocked the first time I really saw how my fixed mindset was showing up practically. So just make a note if any of these scenarios feel a little bit familiar to you. So if when you're faced with a new challenge at work or something that requires you to really stretch outside your comfort zone, do you hear that little voice inside your head urging you to step back because you're probably not really good enough to pull this off and everyone's about to find that out? This can absolutely be an example of your fixed mindset in action. It would much rather that you stay a big fish in a small pond than head into uncharted waters. If you find criticism or negative feedback really difficult or painful to hear because you don't know how you could do any better than what you've done, then these feelings are being shaped by your fixed mindset. When you fail, if your tendency is to sweep it under the rug or just keep moving, nothing to see here, or to blame someone else or the situation, then again, this can be your fixed mindset in action trying to keep you safe. And if you've ever heard yourself say, it's quicker to do it myself, then you can say hello to your fixed mindset. As why would you want to leave any of those outcomes to chance when your sense of self-worth rests on what you are able to accomplish? And as a result, Carol has found that although the fear of proving ourselves worthy can often drive people with a fixed mindset to achieve many amazing things because we love to be seen as experts or leaders or high achievers so that we feel worthy, unfortunately, the constant stress and anxiety that both success and failure can cause us in this mindset means that eventually we tend to plateau or to burn out and we fall short of reaching our true potential. So, Beck, I'm curious if perhaps like some of our listeners have just discovered, you might have struggled with a fixed mindset when it comes to accomplishing what you most want at work and how it might have impacted your ability to thrive.
I may have spent most of my working life in a fixed mindset shell, and it was at the height of these tendencies that I landed a role with responsibilities across the globe working on a Black economic empowerment deal in South Africa, and I was really struggling. I looked like a duck gliding across a pond most days, calm and serene on top, but underneath I was paddling for my life and just hoping I could keep up with the next challenge. So, Shell, what can our listeners do if they've suddenly realised they or one of their teammates is a little stuck in a fixed mindset?
Well, Beck, Carol has also found that some of us have a deep underlying belief that while it's true that we come into the world with a certain amount of talent, intelligence and ability, with effort and practice and the willingness to learn, we can always improve. And she calls this a growth mindset. And of course, findings over the last decade in neuroscience completely support this belief that our brains are wired to keep learning and improving right throughout our lives. So, Beck, let me explain again for our listeners how this growth mindset can practically shape the way they're feeling and acting at work so that they can make a note if any of these scenarios feel familiar to them. And by chance, they're finding that they've already noticed a few fixed mindset behaviours and now they're noticing a few growth mindset behaviours. That's all okay. I'll explain why this can happen as we go. So if instead of worrying about being able to always deliver a result, you're willing to get outside your comfort zone and to take on new challenges, even if it doesn't all go to plan, because you know that you'll learn and you'll grow from this experience, then this is your growth mindset in action. When you're given negative feedback or criticism, if you're able to see it for the gift that it is, even when it's uncomfortable, so that you can keep improving and growing, then this is your growth mindset shaping your feelings. And when you fail, even though it might be painful, if you can see it for the learning opportunity that it is, rather than a judgment of who you are and what you're capable of doing, then you can say hello to your growth mindset. And Beck, I often think Thomas Edison has to be the poster child of a growth mindset with his supposed quote, "I didn't fail, I just found 10,000 ways the light bulb didn't work." And so now when I'm in the middle of a messy, painful failure, I remind myself I'm not up to 10,000 yet and my light bulb could be right around the corner. Now, Carol has found that as a result of how a growth mindset shapes the way we feel and act, we're much more likely to set ourselves stretch goals, to ask for help as we go, to move beyond our present limitations, and to achieve our potential in every domain of life, including our work, our relationships, and our health. But Beck, I will just caution our listeners that if they're hearing this list of growth mindset behaviours and thinking, "Michelle, I'm all good on this one, I'm pure growth mindset," then I'd like to respectfully suggest that actually that's not very growth mindset. Remember that a growth mindset is all about our willingness and ability to keep stretching and learning and growing as we go. And in fact, Carol has found that none of us are all fixed mindset or all growth mindset. Instead, she suggests the way to think about this is like a continuum, and that most of us lean a little more towards one mindset or the other, although different situations and different people can definitely trigger us in the other direction sometimes, like being with my mother. So, Beck, I know that like me, you've discovered all sorts of evidence-based ways to help people practice building their growth mindset. So can you share three of your favourite ways to help our listeners build a growth mindset at work so that they can accomplish more of what matters most to them?
Absolutely, Shell. And be assured I've had plenty of opportunities to try these out on myself over the years. The first one is something I like to call find your fear triggers. Our fixed mindsets are usually triggered by fear. Fear that we're not really good enough, fear that we won't be able to cope if something goes wrong, and fear that other people won't like or value us. So finding out which situations or people tend to trigger your fear is essential to help you to be ready to actively reach for your growth mindset in these moments. Secondly, set learning goals, not just performance goals. Each week, set at least one learning goal to build your confidence in something. It might be a skill you want to gain, a task you want to master, or simply the desire to understand something better. Notice what's happening as you practice. Make mistakes, make adjustments, and eventually start to do better in the confidence you're building. As you tackle this goal, practice letting go of the outcome, embracing your mistakes, and identifying the processes and efforts you can build upon to keep improving. Finally, reframe failure. If we take it as a given that we're all failing some of the time, the only question is if we're getting the learning from these moments. And if we can really hand on heart say we're not failing at all, then we're possibly not stretching far enough. Now, if you find yourself in the midst of a failure at work or stuck on stories about what you can't do, like balance the P&L because you're no good at maths, just remind yourself you can't do it yet, with yet being the most important word in our stories when it comes to the things we're still learning how to pull off. I also recommend that each Friday, as you wrap up the week, take a few minutes to note down what you struggled with this week. What did you learn from that struggle? And how can you apply this learning next week? And if you didn't struggle with anything, note that you need to stretch a little further with next week's learning goals.
Beck, I love those suggestions. And as always, we'll be sure to add them into today's Wellbeing Lab cheat sheet for our listeners, which they can download from the same spot where they found today's podcast. And while I know that failing fast and failing better have become popular ideas in many workplaces, as we've started to appreciate that making mistakes is a natural part of the learning process for all of us, I do sometimes worry, Beck, that although more and more companies are teaching the skills of creativity and innovation through design thinking and other approaches, what we often don't learn alongside them is the ability to practice a growth mindset and the need for self-compassion, to be able to treat ourselves like a wise and kind friend or mentor or coach would as we're learning. Now, I understand for many of our listeners that the idea of needing self-compassion at work might sound a little bit soft, right? It's not like cultivating grit, which sounds tough and impressive. But having interviewed Angela and Carol in the last year, both of them agreed that it is impossible to be gritty without a healthy dose of self-compassion to go along with it. You see, Dr. Kristen Neff from the University of Texas has found that if our efforts to accomplish what matters most to us don't go as planned, our brain is actually wired to try and protect us by attacking the source of the problem, which in this case is ourselves. So our brain fires up our inner critic and those feelings of self-doubt by telling us stories about why our efforts aren't working and what could go wrong now as a means of trying to motivate us to push forward or to disengage entirely from the effort. And the problem with this is that over time, it tends to heighten our stress and our anxiety, and it undermines our sense of confidence. In contrast, Kristen's found that when we reach for self-compassion, it actually allows us to acknowledge the pain that we're feeling and to remember that we're still learning just like everyone else, so that we can step away from that inner critic and instead see things in a clearer and more balanced way, so that we can decide when do we persist, when do we need to try a different path, when do we need to let go and put our energy into something that's going to serve us better long term, so that we can avoid those pitfalls of stupid grit. And as a result, studies have found that when we reach for self-compassion, it activates our brain's caregiving and self-awareness systems, making it much easier for us to believe that we are capable and worthy, making us less self-conscious as we try new things, making us less likely to compare ourselves to others, and less likely to feel insecure. And so far from being self-indulgent or making us soft, the deliberate use of self-compassion has been found to be an incredibly effective means of enhancing our motivation, our performance, and our resilience so that we can thrive at work. So Beck, again, I know self-compassion is a skill that you teach people all the time. Do you have any tips for our listeners on how they can reach for self-compassion instead of beating themselves up with self-criticism when it comes to improving their levels of grit?
Well, Shell, when things haven't gone quite to plan and we hear that inner critic start to clear its throat, ready to give us a serve, I think it's the perfect time to reach for our PERMA 3-point check so we can quickly ascertain what's going on. Step one, how are we feeling? This question helps us to acknowledge our feelings of discomfort, fear, or even pain. Step two, why are we feeling like this? This question helps us to recognize the reason for this emotion. Are we embarrassed, disappointed, ashamed? Has our ego been dented, or have we let someone down? And step three, who do we want to be as we step forward? This helps us to take action. It enables us to fall down 7 and get up 8. It allows us to continue to pursue our goals whilst sidelining the ones that no longer serve us. Remember that we want to hold on to that kindness mindset and be our own kind and wise inner coach in these moments as we explore different recipes for thriving. Another approach our listeners might like to try is something we call soothe your pain. You see, physical gestures can have an immediate effect on our bodies, activating the soothing parasympathetic nervous system. So, to get away from the stories in your head, you might want to put your hands over your heart or simply place one hand over the opposite wrist. You can do this under the table in a meeting or behind your back if you're standing. And just breathe nice and slowly for about 7 seconds to induce some oxytocin, our tender befriend hormone, back into your bloodstream. This will, of course, also lower your levels of cortisol, so you'll be in the best place to decide how you want to step forward. And finally, one of my other favorites is to whisper a self-compassion mantra. So instead of letting your negative emotions hijack your confidence, think of what a wise and kind friend might say to you in the moments when things don't go to plan. For example, hang on, in most situations, you're better than you think you are. Let's figure this out. Or perhaps, you've got this, just slow down, take a breath. Or even, you're doing the best you can, just be open to the learning and keep putting one foot in front of the other. A little tip is that the studies have found that less important than what you say is how you say it to yourself. So try to extend the same warmth and encouragement you would for anyone else in this moment to yourself.
Beck, I have to confess, for me personally, learning how to reach for self-compassion with one hand to hold the opposite wrist and to just breathe slowly for 7 seconds while I'm there has saved me in many board meetings and presentations when I've really needed a quick boost to my levels of grit. So as always, we'll be sure to put all of these tips into today's Wellbeing Lab cheat sheet for our listeners.
Well, Shell, let's see how your levels of grit are doing today as we get ready for our, drum roll please, the Let's Get Real round. Are you ready, Shell?
Fire away, Beck.
My first question today, Shell, is how can we afford to practice a growth mindset and set learning goals if outcomes are all that matter in our workplace?
Beck, this is such an important question, and Carol would want me to stress that a growth mindset doesn't mean that we don't value outcomes. After all, outcomes are part of the learning process, right? They're an important part of the feedback loop. It just means that we recognise that often before an outcome is reached, there are a whole lot of steps that need to be mastered in order to consistently pull that outcome off. Now, in most workplaces, we're pretty good at setting outcome goals and we need these to guide our efforts, but we also need to identify the learning goals that might make those outcomes possible. So, for example, when I first started playing with growth mindsets, I was the national brand manager for one of Australia's largest firms, and the only thing my boss was interested in setting for me were performance goals around repositioning our brand and making sure that we achieved competitive differentiation for the first time in our market. But as I tried to pull that off and not completely undermine my performance or well-being in the process, I realized that I needed to set for myself a whole lot of smaller learning goals that would help to shrink that change down into something that was going to be manageable, maybe even enjoyable. And so I started to run small, quick pilot experiments, for example, where I might test an ad message in a particular medium, gather as much feedback data as I could, learn from what had worked and what didn't, and then build on that knowledge and run the next little experiment, learn from that, and then run the next one, and so on. Now, some of those experiments worked better than I could ever have imagined, and some failed for reasons that I'd never anticipated. But Beck, it was this constant opportunity opportunity to practice my growth mindset and often my self-compassion along with it that enable me to start taking smart risks and to learn things that I never would have had the courage to try otherwise. And within 9 months, independent research showed that we had finally achieved differentiation from our competitors. But best of all, instead of being a stressed out mess throughout this process, I'd honestly enjoyed the learning experience, even when at times it had been uncomfortably challenging for me. So even though your organization or your boss might be driven purely by outcomes, it doesn't mean that you can't set learning goals for yourself to help figure out how you're going to achieve those performance outcomes they want. And in my experience, and this is a sample of one thing here, Beck, by doing this, it definitely helped to lower my levels of stress by focusing me on what was in my control, which was my willingness to show up, to give things my best shot, and to learn from whatever unfolded. And in most situations, for me, this has made it much easier to be able to achieve or even surpass the performance goals that have been set. And in those times when I have fallen short, and they definitely happen to all of us, it's also really helped me to either be more realistic about the performance goals I've been setting, or to accept that that situation just might not be the best alignment of my strengths, and so I should be doing something different. But at least I know I gave it my best shot, and I'll never be left wondering what I'm truly capable of.
Well, that leads me into the second question, Shell, which is how do we avoid moments of stupid grit when we persist with something or someone for far longer than we should have?
Ilbeck, I think many of us have had those moments of stupid grit. So my colleague Caroline Adams-Miller would suggest that what we want to be aiming for instead is what she describes as authentic grit. An authentic grit allows us to passionately pursue hard goals that help us to take positive risks, to flourish emotionally as we do it, to inspire others, and to live our best lives. And we can ensure that we're cultivating authentic grit by ensuring that whatever we're doing, it's grounded in our sense of meaning and purpose and focused on making a positive difference for ourselves and for others, rather than just hustling for our sense of self-worth at other people's expense. It's another one of those two-for-one or two-for-deals, Beck, when it comes to our well-being ingredients. Now, Professor David D'Estano at Northeastern University also suggests that we can tap into some authentic grit by harnessing our more social emotions, such as gratitude, compassion, and authentic pride, which have been found to help us be more future-orientated in our choices, to willingly acquire new skills, and to persevere in the face of difficulty so that we can achieve the outcomes that benefit ourselves and others in the long run. It's a great way to help us build a bit more self-regulation by foregoing some short-term pleasure for ourselves in order to get some long-term benefits for ourselves and other people as well. So a couple of ways that we can do this, Beck, is by getting grateful, as you suggested back in podcast 3 when we were talking about our positive emotions. We can also do it by clicking compassionately with others and discovering those very human everyday things that we all have in common so that we start to see each other as being part of one big team rather than getting stuck in stories of us versus them. And lastly, we can savour a victory lap every now and then when we deserve it by soaking in that feeling of humble pride that comes when you've really shared your expertise and you've made a difference to others so that we can build that sense of quiet confidence that, yeah, we can do hard things, we're capable of doing this and of really making a difference for others. And then lastly, Beck, Angela Duckworth would also suggest that it's worth having other gritty people around you so that if you need to check in on how you're moving towards a goal and whether you're starting to hurt rather than to help yourself and other people, then you're able to do that. And the thing about other gritty people is that because you trust that they know what it takes to achieve the things that matter to them, they're often a really credible sounding board or a voice of reason for us when we start to wonder about the wisdom of persisting when we're struggling so that we can avoid those stupid grit moments.
Shell, I think knowing when to stop and when to persist is something most of us need a little help with. So we'll be sure to add those tips for cultivating authentic grit into today's Wellbeing Lab cheat sheet. My last question for you today is, what if we work in a team where there is no tolerance for mistakes?
Well, Beck, this is a sign that psychological safety is missing in that team. And I loved earlier your point that we are all failing some of the time. The only question is if we're getting the learning from those moments or missing out on them entirely. The problem is when we lack psychological safety with each other, we don't talk about the mistakes for fear that we'll be judged, for fear that we might be made fun of or punished in some way. So number one, if you are a team leader, you need to make it safe to talk about mistakes. And when I was at the accounting firm, I added a standing agenda item for sharing the screw-up of the week in our team so that we could talk more openly about our mistakes and learn from them. Now, at first, my team was pretty sure, Beck, that this was a management trick to get them to start confessing to all the things that they were doing wrong. So initially, it was just my mistakes that were being shared each week. But after a couple of weeks, we did learn two important things from this process. Now, number one, I was still there to tell the story, so I hadn't been fired for getting things wrong. And secondly, that we had learned some of the most important things over those weeks by talking about my mistakes, and we would have completely missed out on those learning opportunities otherwise. And so gradually, everyone else started to share their mistakes as well. So if you're a team leader, you need to find a way to make it safe for people to share their mistakes with each other so that you can normalize the fact that struggle and getting things wrong sometimes is just part of how we learn and grow together. Secondly, Beck, if you're working for a boss who doesn't understand yet that human beings are wired to make mistakes and to learn from them, just like every other living system on this planet, then it might be time to have a kind conversation and to share some of what you've been learning throughout these podcasts and why psychological safety actually helps to improve team performance by being able to talk about some of the failures and not just the successes that you're experiencing individually and collectively in your team. Now, just remember that your boss is doing the best they can with what they have in this moment. And so the respectful thing to do, the kind thing to do, is to let them know something isn't working as well as it could be for you or your team. And then by chance, Beck, our listeners are working for someone who they really feel would not value that kind of kind conversation yet, then I really loved your suggestion earlier about checking in for ourselves at the end of each week about what we've struggled with, what did we learn, and how can we apply this next week so that at least we're being honest with ourselves about our mistakes and our failures and making the most of those learning opportunities.
Shell, again, thank you so much for some great small tips to help us build our levels of grit and accomplish more of what matters to us at work. I can't believe this is our last episode for the Wellbeing Lab podcast for Xero. But of course, if people want more, Shell, they can join you on the free weekly Making Positive Psychology Work podcast, which they can find on iTunes and Stitcher. And to our listeners, thank you so much for being here with us today and throughout this podcast series. It's been such a joy to spend this time with you and to share some practical and tested ways to build your levels of grit so that you can believe that you're capable of embracing a customer mindset and help you to thrive more at work each day. And to help you put these final ideas into action, why not try today's Wellbeing Lab challenges? Firstly, set yourself a learning goal that will stretch you outside your comfort zone for the next week and give you an opportunity to practice your growth mindset. Remember to use your SDT guide for success and make want-to choices, track your progress, and buddy up with someone in your team or a friend to share how you're doing. Just make sure you can prioritize some time. In fact, put it in your diary if you can to really give this goal your best shot. Then, at the end of the week, as you're heading home, take those few minutes to check in on how you went. What did you struggle with? What did you learn? How can you apply this to a new learning goal for next week?
And to help your team improve their levels of psychological safety and grit, in your next team meeting, take a few minutes to talk about what you've struggled with lately. What have you learned from those experiences? And how can you apply those lessons to what you have coming up over the next few weeks? And if there's nothing that you're struggling with right now, then know as a team, it's time to set some bigger learning goals for yourself so you can see what you're truly capable of achieving. Remember, the more that you can normalize struggle as part of the learning process, the safer it'll become to talk about your failures and the more you'll grow together. Of course, as always, we've put all of these and more tips into today's Wellbeing Lab cheat sheet for you, which you can download from the same places where you found this podcast. After all, as Carol Dweck wisely said, when people already know they are deficient, they have nothing to lose by trying. You've been listening to the Wellbeing Lab podcast with Michelle McQuaid.
And Beck Melville, thank you for being part of the Wellbeing Lab podcast with us. And remember, take care and stay well.